This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
And I'm delighted to say that we are joined by the leader of Barking and Dagenham Council, Councillor Darren Rodwell. Darren, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Luke, thanks for asking me to come on.
We were just chatting before we started recording there, and that you may be the busiest man in British politics. So let's kick off with the various hats that you wear at sort of a local and regional level as well. And we'll have a look at sort of the future national aspirations. But yeah, kick us off. Tell us a bit about the roles that you hold in Barking Dagenham and a regional level across London as well.
Okay, so at this moment in time, I'm a director on a number of different boards, which you would expect being a leader of a council. I also lead Barking and Dagenham, what I say probably one of the most aspirational councils in the country right now, really forward thinking. I'm also regional lead, so for London councils, I lead on housing planning regeneration and spokesman for that. I've just given up being deputy chair of London councils because of my future aspirations. I didn't think it was right for the organisation to have me in that role as well. I also, for the LGA, I am the Labour spokesman and I'm also the vice chair for Environment, Economy, Housing and Transport for Local Government Association. So part of it Labour, part of it for the whole organisation as well. Other than that,
it's a lot of free time.
Just don't tell the missus. Says to me, you know, what are you doing now? And when I say to people, how are you happily married? I say, I'm happily married. I'm not sure about the wife. I never see her, but I think we are.
She seems to be happy. Brilliant. Well, look, let's kick off with Barking and Dagenham. You talked about it being, you know, the most aspirational local authority and borough, and I think, you know, that's absolutely true. You know, you've been leader for a while. What's changed while you've been in post? What's sort of the transition that you've seen, and what, if anything, stayed the same?
So again, the aspiration of place has stayed the same. You've got to understand this place and what makes it special is its people and its history. So we are the place that helped defeat slavery. We are the place that brought equality. And of course, we're the place that won the World Cup for the country. So when you look at it in that way, it's so aspirational and inspirational. But in the last sort of 9 years and so many months, the biggest change is seeing benefit to the community. Mm-hmm. Our deprivation is there for all to see. You know, we were like a mining town of the north of England on the side of London.
Yeah.
When Fords left us in 2002, the place collapsed. We had the BNP and all of that history, if you like. But today we sit here as the most culturally diverse council in London and probably the country, with 14 different ethnic backgrounds on the council. So whilst we may be one party, we are many different communities. And that's a really fantastic thing to have. And that's what makes us so aspirational and inspirational as well. We have done a lot around regeneration, but it's not regeneration and gentrification. It's actually inclusive growth and aspirational working class values. And that's a very different way of doing regeneration. And we learn a lot from the Becontree Estate, the first housing estate of its kind and the largest ever built in the country. And we keep using that model. So there has to be that social infrastructure. It has to be led by the community, facilitated for by the council, invested in by partners. And that's what we see with our youth zone. It's what we see with the film studios. It's what we see with the free markets of London, the largest data centre in the UK, the world-class science and engineering facilities with UCL Pearl. That's what we've seen with, you know, the free port that's coming and working, the thousands of jobs. So, and that's not including the 50,000 homes that we're looking to build over the next 20 years. So, you know, we're looking to build the city of York in the south of the borough.
Yeah, I think for my money, I don't know if you remember this now, but back in the tail end of 2019, start of 2020, we launched Lisa and Andy's leadership campaign over there.
I remember.
the Ford stamping plant strikes, and they, you know, the rich sort of political history of the borough. And it is, you know, it's unique in London and in the country, really, in terms of, as you say, being that sort of incredible community and that sort of aspiration and that drive. How much of that has always existed, and how much of that is facilitated through the political leadership of the council? How much of that is sort of top down, and how much of it is bottom up?
I would say 95% of it's bottom up. So what is the role of a councillor? The role of the councillor is to be the voice, but also to be the facilitator of the aspiration of that community. So I joke about, you know, bringing equality and stopping slavery and the whole thing around winning the World Cup for the country. Well, if you actually look at this, we have links to Lord Denman, who actually got the anti-slavery bill through Parliament. He lived in Dagenham in Parslow's Manor House, and he was helped by Lord Thomas, Elizabeth Fry's brother-in-law. Elizabeth Fry is buried in Barking, right? And it was 13 years after William Wilberforce had left Parliament that it actually got through Parliament because of Lord Denman. So we have a link there. Now, using that link, you can then show people that you are welcome to this place, right? Because we were a borough built for immigration. We were built for the slums of the Old East End, which means people from other countries that had gone there and then came to our borough. If you look at the equality, well, remember, it was the women of Dagenham Falls, the very people you're talking about, yeah, in 68 and 84, that eventually got the Equal Pay Act through. And that's not including the suffragees and the suffragettes. That's not including the wicked lady, Lady Fanshawe. You know, that's not including Mary Wollstonecraft and Mary Shelley. There's so many strong women that have come from the borough. And, you know, they're an inspiration to all of us. And ultimately, obviously, the World Cup, you know, Bobby Moore came from Barking, Sir Alf Ramsey from Dagenham, Terry Venables was a Dagenham lad, Jimmy Greaves was a Dagenham lad, Martin Peters was a Barking lad. So if you look at the leadership, it came from the people they lived amongst. Yeah. So I always believe that it's always been here. All we've got to do is harvest it in a way that works for the wider community, because those that are most aspirational need to support those that are the most vulnerable. And that's what I do as a leader. So my job is to facilitate that aspiration that's always been here.
And you talked about, you know, the benefits of development and bringing that sort of inward investment, but not gentrification, right? You're not looking to drive out communities. It's about delivering for existing residents and supporting people who live in the borough and who want to, you know, stay and work and raise families. How do you do that? That's a very big question, but you know, there aren't too many boroughs that do it well, right? You know, there are a lot of places that are almost proud in their anti-development stance. Yeah. You know, they wear it as a badge of honour. Yeah. But ultimately, we know where that ends from a socioeconomic perspective.
Well, we know that from a community perspective as well. If you look at what's happening in London, and I was speaking about this earlier to BBC London, we've got the largest housing crisis now since Charles Booth and, you know, Rowntree Foundation was formed. You know, we shouldn't be in the space that we are now, but we've got a borough's worth of homelessness in London. You know, 170,000 families, 83,500 children are not in permanent accommodation. So of course we've got to facilitate everyone. And I'm really proud as a borough, at Lead for London, so I'll do the borough first, then I'll go on to what we're doing with Lead of London. As a borough, we've built 20% of London's affordable housing, truly affordable housing, since COVID. And that's really important. And we are the top provider of social affordable council equivalent rent. Now, what we've got to do is understand the economics that we're in. There are poor families, there are working poor families, there are squeezed middle, and then there is the rest, the small sort of 5%. Yeah. Some would say even 1%. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is the vast majority of people are struggling right now. Yeah. So what we did here was we set up a company, a wholly owned development investment planning company called BeFirst, which has been shown to be the best in class through CIFA. It's changed our planning to be one of the best, if not the best, in the country as well. 10,000 homes have gone through planning in the last 2 years alone. And we'll continue doing that because we're buying, we're getting the aspiration from our community. So what do people really want? Well, they want a home that's warm and safe. They want a community they feel safe amongst, and they want their children to do better than they did. Yep. So when you do these estates, you not just do them as standalone. They've got to be inclusive to everything else that's going on around. So yeah, we've had to improve our schools. We've had to make sure people have more opportunities to jobs. And we've got to make sure that those homes are truly affordable. And I'm really pleased. In the last 4 years, we've built over 2,000 homes, of which 85% of those have gone to local families. And we've taken 900 people off of our waiting list, our council waiting list. We're the only borough in London where TA has consistently dropped for the last 5 years.
Wow, that must really like the trend, right?
It is. It has. I mean, this year, actually, it's slightly up, but for 5 years, it was dropping. Yeah. And the reason why it's gone the wrong way is because the whole of London is. So our issue is now, as I said, we've got a borough's worth of homelessness. Now, I can do that as one single borough, but then I have a role for the whole region. And my role for the region is to get everyone working together and looking at this as a single problem. Because if it's a problem in Newham, or if it's a problem in Ealing or Croydon or Barnet, actually it's a problem for Barking and Dagenham as well. So we've got to do it cross-party and cross-sector. And that's why we've set up Opportunity London. Now, Opportunity London, which I've been working on for about 3 years with Nick from the NLA, is a platform where we can say to international investors and national investors, but mainly international investors, here are your opportunities that are oven ready, if you like, and backed by local government. Now, again, that entity is supported by about 40 private businesses. It's supported by the Thames Estuary Commission and team. It's supported by the Mayor of London and London and Partners. So it's about bringing all the elements together to say, first of all, we need that investment, but we also need to tell people there are opportunities. So there's 143,000 homes that could be built today if the funding was there through some public, national government, and some private. And that's what we're trying to do.
How easy or difficult is it to build that political consensus? Because I think development, particularly in the last couple of years, you look at last year's local elections, it felt like in certain parts of London, it was quite a NIMBY election. You know, there were a lot of people running on sort of almost anti-development platforms. It was sort of like, you know, we're not going to build homes. You know, we aren't going to overdevelop the borough. And in other places, you know, I may be biased, but I think Labour-led administrations, more so than any other, were saying, well, look, we've got to develop them, so we'll work with communities to build what we need. How easy is it or hard to build that consensus across party?
Well, I've got to be honest, the other shadow leads that I work with understand the issues. So if you look at what's happened in Croydon, you know, they've got a massive issue about housing right now. Yeah. Now they're a Conservative administration. So their problems are still the same as my problems as a Labour administration. So whilst you may have the NIMBYism of what I call small politics, yeah, you're politicking for politicking's sake, rather than trying to come out with an outcome that brings the most to that community. And we've seen this with you, Les. I was very clear on you, Les. You know, of course we need better air quality. I've got the third worst air quality in London, 10th worst air quality in the country. I'm for you, Les. But government at a national level had to put more investment in the mitigation, because actually those are the most vulnerable, or those working that need those vehicles need that support. So there has to be a proper conversation, an adult political conversation. And my problem, and you are right, it's taken a while to get everyone to understand we are all in this together.
Yeah.
You know, so whether it's housing, it affects all of us. No matter your political persuasion, it shouldn't be a political punch bag. And you saw this best after the Second World War. So whether it was Attlee or it was Winston Churchill, yeah, the two major parties agreed that we needed the biggest house building program after the war.
Yep.
Well, actually, I'm looking at this in the same way when it comes to what happened with COVID. Yeah, because COVID was a world-changing event. I mean, we lost more people in East London to COVID than we did in the Blitz. Yeah. Wow. Now, when you look at it in that way, and we've seen, you know, how we all came together then,
yeah,
actually, why can't we do it in what is an essential part of our infrastructure, right? So we need to get agreement and take it away from the politicking. Now, of course, we'll have difference of opinion, and of course, we will debate that, but we should debate that in an understanding that there's going to be an outcome. And that's what I think London Councils has done exceedingly well. We've worked well with the mayor, and you'll see that we've beaten the targets that were set for us. And, you know, a lot of criticism was given to the mayor on bringing in the 30%, you know, 35% target. But actually that brought in truly affordable housing, which London desperately needed. Because if you're building, you know, 1,000 homes, but none of those are for the cleaners, you know, the street workers, you know, frontline, you know, key workers, whatever you want to call them, everyone is a key worker. If you're not building for them, actually, you're not building the infrastructure you need for the place. So that's what I think we've done locally. It's what I've led locally and shown it can be done. So in our borough, we have six different rent levels. So it starts off at RP, council equivalent rent. Then it goes to 50% market rent. Then it goes to 65% market rent, which is London Living Rent, I think it's called, the mayor calls it. Then it's 80% market rent. Then it's market rent, because there are people that can afford it. And then there's shared ownership. So we have six different levels, and it's all based on your income. So it is more difficult for someone in what would be traditional council housing today and for authorities to be able to make that happen. Because if you build a house today or a property today, it's about 300K. Well, that's about 85 years before you get your money back on the rent that are the average rents of London. You then add in your management costs and your repair costs, you're now talking over 100 years. And that's without anything being sold off, which, by the way, after 6 weeks, if you're building it under the HRA, it can be sold. So we've got to go back to principles of when we built the Beckentree, when we built the Greater London Ring, how did we do it? Well, we did it cross-party, cross-sector, with an objective to build homes that would bring eco-financial benefit to those in situations in London and, of course, across the country. So that's really the simple answer.
That's very good.
Yeah, putting it all through together. So, but having those political differences, and you know, we were talking earlier, and you know, I knew you from Lisa, working with Lisa at the time, and you know, when I talked to her, you know, even with some of the things I've spoken to her about, she goes, "Well, Dale, what about this?" And I go, "Yeah, but this is what we're doing right now." So we've had that difference, but it's respecting each other's position. Then I'll speak to a Conservative minister, and I'll say, "That's great. I'm pleased you're giving us this amount of money, but this is what we really need." And they'll say, "Yes, but this is the problem the government's in right now." You know, me just throwing stones at anyone doesn't actually get the outcomes we actually need. So it's about understanding each other's position, but understanding what the outcomes will be if we stick in those positions.
I want to pick your brains about the national stuff, because we'll go on next. But just before I do, it's a difficult development environment in general across London at the minute.
Yeah.
How is that manifesting itself in the borough for you guys? What are the challenges you see, and how are you overcoming them?
So as a borough, obviously we're still building at the moment. But let's be frank about it. Whether it's public sector or private sector, build is going to stop unless there is an injection of cash from national government. So let me throw it on its head for you for a second. As a country at the moment, we're spending £28 billion a year on housing benefit. Now, the vast majority of that going to the private sector. Yeah?
Yeah.
By 2026-27, they reckon that will be up to about £34 billion a year. Now, my discussions with government is, well, if you're putting that money and it's going into the private sector, what's happening? Because you know there's a problem. We need to find a way, because over the long term, it's unsustainable and it's unfair to people today. So we need to find a way of saying, okay, yes, we need to pay what we're paying right now, but we need to bring that arc down. We need to
get the root out of this situation.
That's
right?
It. We need to find a productive process that gives an outcome. And the only way we can do that is by building more housing of the right sort that benefits. So I've called them infrastructure homes for a very long time. 100 years ago, they called them the Homes for Heroes after the First World War. But it's a proper house building program that we base it on people's not only need, but also their ability to pay. Because if you have someone who's on a much higher wage than someone on benefits, then actually the benefit cost that person is, you know, whatever third of their income is there. Well, if you base it all on the third of income, then it surely is right that someone still gets help, but they pay a bit more than that person who's living on benefits.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the conversations I've had with Lisa and Matthew about saying, well, actually, we should vary the rents based on people's ability to pay. And there should be a top level as well. So if you're my household, I've got myself, my wife, my son working, my other son's going to come back soon. Between us, there'll be about £120,000 a year coming into the household. Now, the truth of the matter is, I wish my kids would pay into whatever they do. They never do. the truth of the matter is, it wouldn't be right for me to have a council property paying the same rent, you know, £107 in my case in Barking and Dagenham, as someone on benefits.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, not taking an exorbitant amount. So you could cap it at a higher level. What that would do is it would put more money back into the HRAs, because most of the HRAs, the housing revenue budgets, are falling over now with the fire safety, with the new green economy that we've got to do. So we need to find a way of sharing the load. And at the moment, it's not being shared.
Yeah. Completely. I think it's, you know...
You said this was going to be a jovial chat. This is me being serious.
We've done West Ham. okay, so let's think about national then. So you're a parliamentary candidate now.
I am.
And you know, barring something absolutely unbelievable happening, we'll be seeing you in Westminster. Mm. Probably, you know, best guess will be autumn next year, shall we say? Between sort of June and October, probably. And hopefully, I'm allowed to be biased on this podcast. You know, Keir's in number 10. Lisa's unpacking, you know, the cardboard box in Whitehall, in levelling up. What do you want to see a Labour government bringing in from day one? What the conversations you're having with, you know, Matt Pennycook and Lisa? What needs to change at a national level? Because I think there's, from what I've seen so far, you know, from the Labour nationally, is there's a lot about devolution, right? Putting resource and decision making back in the hands of communities, you know, back to councils, and, you know, driving it down and out. But you just touched on it there. You know, you almost need a national strategy for this, right? And we're seeing the current government rowing away from that and shying away from taking a coordinating central role. What do you want to see from Labour? Is it more of the sort of top-down stuff, or is it, you know, empowering local councils?
I want to see a bit of both. I want to see leadership at the top, because that's been missing for a while now, it's fair to say. But I want to see more empowerment at the bottom. It's quite interesting. People say to me, you know, why are you doing this? Because you've got all the power now. Well, actually, no, we haven't. But there is no leadership. So in this current government, may I say, you know, how can you have 15 housing ministers in, well, what is it, 10 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you Chelsea managers.
Yeah. I mean, you just can't have consistency of delivery if what you're doing is chopping and changing all of the time.
Yeah.
There's no focus. So one of the biggest problems with British politics, it's become the cycle, the four-year cycle. Oh, let's just worry about the four-year cycle. Well, actually, we haven't here in Barking and Dagenham. One of the things I often say to people, why have we had such good political success? Because people have bought into the vision, because it's their vision. So I've said this to Kia, actually, and I've said this to Lisa and Matthew. You know, it is about showing the leadership, but it's also making sure that people understand it's their vision. Because when those people say, oh, I don't want that property built near my house, and I say, but isn't it your grandchildren waiting for a home? And they go, yes, it is. And I go, well, wouldn't you want them just round the corner?
Yeah.
You know, it's about bringing it back to where people are at. And, you know, we once had a community, lots of communities up and down the country where families were literally in a mile radius of each other. Yeah. Because we had the big social infrastructure to allow that to happen. Well, that's been absolutely decimated in the last 10 years. So that's the aspiration. That's the vision that we need to get back to. I mean, in 97, we had to fix the schools and we had to fix the NHS, but the rest of the infrastructure was working okay.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in 2024, every bit is broken. So I would argue this in a very polite and PLP respective way, that housing has to be at the core of everything we do. The home is the core of everyone's aspiration. It needs to be warm and safe, you know, and it needs to be inviting, and the community around it needs to respect it. So with that being said, I think we have some really good policies. I love the fact that Kia came out saying we're builders, not blockers. Now, again, some other people said, oh, this is terrible, the green belt, everything else. No, let's have an adult conversation. Because they did 100 years ago. My borough went from being a small town and three small villages to a massive housing estate. Now, I'm not saying that's going to work everywhere, but look at what we did in the 1960s when we built the Sloughs and we built the Basildons and we built Harlow. We need to add on to that. We need to carry on that progress. And we can do it in a way that's green and sustainable. So there's the whole new program about retrofitting, and we've got to be honest about what we can and can't retrofit. Yep. You know, there's some properties in this borough where, frankly, you're better off just knocking them down and starting again. Yeah, yep. It makes much more sense. Now, there's some stuff, of course, we wouldn't want to do that to historic buildings. Of course, they're there, and we want that to continue. But we have to have a sensible conversation about it. So I would hope we get the leadership, and I believe it's there. I really, truly do. As the Keir as the Prime Minister and then his cabinet. I think we've got some great leads across our cabinet these days, doing a very good and professional job whilst listening and being empathetic to the situation, but being honest about what we can actually achieve. The other bit we do need to do is we need to say who's got the responsibility. So if it is local government's responsibility to do what I call a national build programme, I called it Build for Britain, I wrote a paper on it, then actually I expect those councils to deliver. And if they don't deliver, then there has to be a mechanism for that to be dealt with.
Yeah.
And it's the same as Lisa, I think it was, announced the hope value being taken away from land and planning. Well, I called that CPO plus. I wrote a paper on this probably 5 years ago now.
I've read it.
Yep, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Right. So, that was really important to me, because I'm not saying that local government needs to do it all, but why should someone make a fortune just by getting outline planning permission and then not build it out? We should have the power to say, sorry, no, that's not right. We're now going to work with this developer to build it out, and you're going to give me that land back at pre-value of planning consent. Yeah. That will stop the flipping that we've seen, especially in the course, like the core cities. You know, every leader I speak to in any of our major cities say it happens all the time. We've seen it here as well. So they're the sort of things we need back, but it needs to be a two-way relationship. So if a let's say a leafy council somewhere decides it doesn't want to build, because as we've seen, the Conservatives row back on that promise, then
I mean, no names.
Yeah. then actually, what we need to say is, okay, if you don't want to do that, we're still going to charge you as if you did. Yeah? Yeah. And actually, that money is now going to go into a central pot for those places that are doing the country's bidding. They're doing what we all want to see. And that will help those places that want to be proactive, aspirational, and support their residents, and those other places that want to stay stagnating in that situation. It may be good for them today, but actually they're the ones I often hear complaining about. They don't have the right infrastructure anymore, because actually there isn't enough people living there to put that infrastructure in an affordable way.
And it's the high streets that start to fall into decline as well. It's absolutely. You know, yeah,
absolutely. And, you've seen that. I mean, I'm pleased that we're now stopping the big supermarket build, you know, the out of town supermarket type stuff. I was in Sheerness the other day, and I walked down the high street at Sheerness, and most of the shops are empty, and the ones that are there, you just think, oh, that's a real, because you could see it over many years, it would have been vibrant. I mean, it's beautiful old what I call fishing village buildings, you know. It's a lovely place. At the end of the high street, though, I won't say which brand because that'd be wrong, but there's a big superstore. And you think, well, that's what killed it. Ultimately, that killed it. And then you add to the internet, and I'm a firm believer with the internet that there should be some form of taxing. You know, you should be able to say, well, no, sorry, if you're not paying, I think it's against British business personally. Because if the guy who's on the high street has to pay business rates and all the other costs he or she have to pay, then actually we should be making sure it's more of an equal playing field. And when people say, oh, no, they'll take their business elsewhere. No, they won't, because actually they want to make money. So they'll pay what they need to pay. And I do believe they need to pay the right taxes as well.
Yeah. Well, it's an argument we've heard throughout history, isn't it? You can't do that. It was national minimum wage, I remember, in 1997, 1998, wasn't it?
That's right.
You can't do that. Well, you can, but it's worth it. Darren, thank you so much for your time today. We could talk about, I think we could keep going for
I've got to be honest, this was much more serious than you told me. You hit me and said, we're just going to have a chat, like as if we were having a beer. I don't normally have these chats in the pub anymore.
We'll definitely get a beer at conference.
Oh, that sounds good. Luke, as always, thank you very much. And it was a real pleasure having a chat. And I hope, I hope we catch up at conference. And I look forward to a more prosperous future for the country, because it's desperately needed under a Labour government, if I could be a little bit political.
You definitely can. Councillor Darren Rockwell, thank you so much.
Well, that's it from us. Thanks for listening to another episode of Better Places. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be back for another one after the summer. Have a good summer, everyone. See you later. Bye, 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 bye.